HBO's Succession is one of the most acclaimed television shows of the 21st century. Millions of fans were captured by the gripping story of the fight within a family to gain control of a media empire. But the real-life story of the fight within the Murdoch family just might be better. That story is told in a new book by Gabriel Sherman, The Bonfire of the Murdochs. We're very lucky to be joined by him this morning. Good morning, and welcome to Mountain Money.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So, Gabe, what motivated you to write this book, and how long did it take to do the research?
Yeah, well, a few things. I think just at the top here, I count myself as one of the millions of Succession fans. So I was riveted by the show and really was excited to dive in and tell the real life version. No, but backing up, I've covered the Murdochs on and off for the past 15 plus years as a journalist at various publications in New York. And after this Nevada court case in 2024 and the recent settlement that the family finally put their differences aside and handed the crown to Lachlan, Rupert's firstborn son, I decided this was really the moment to tell this full story of how this empire was built and how the family tore itself apart. And I guess I would say, you know, I worked in earnest on the book for 3 years, but it's really based on my entire career's worth of research.
Can you set the stage a bit by talking about Rupert Murdoch's upbringing and the start of his media career?
Yes, you know, this is really a book about a family. Yes, it happens to take place in the cutthroat world of big media, newspapers, and television, and all of that. But really, it's about his family, and it's about a pattern that has repeated through the generations. And that story begins with in the early 20th century with Rupert Murdoch's father in Australia, a man by the name of Sir Keith Murdoch, who was one of the most famous Australian journalists of his generation and went on to become a wealthy newspaper publisher and executive. And he had one son. He had three daughters and a son. And Rupert, his only son, was groomed from the early age to follow him into the newspaper business. And Sir Keith Murdoch was a very withholding and judgmental father. And it was like that, it was that origin story, that pattern of a father who didn't know and didn't trust his child to be up for the challenge of following him into the business that we see repeated through the next generation and ultimately, you know, what was dramatized so brilliantly on Succession. So that was really the sort of, I wanted to start the story there because you can see how this story is really something that played out over a century.
And just on a side note, what happened to the daughters?
So Rupert bought his siblings out in 1991. You know, he really had to consolidate control. So he borrowed a bunch of money and bought his sisters out to gain control within his own branch of the family. So, you know, they still own stock and shares in the estate, but they have no control over the companies.
So that's pre-succession.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he was, this has played out over decades. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go back. We have a young Rupert Murdoch. He's groomed to enter journalism. How does he start his career? And when does he start making these kinds of acquisitive moves that would characterize his ascent?
So, you know, most people associate Rupert Murdoch with conservative media. You know, most prominently, he's the owner of Fox News here in America, but all over the world, he owns conservative-leaning newspapers and tabloids. But it wasn't always this way. And perhaps as a rebellion to his own father, he had a college, a youthful dalliance with far-left politics. At Oxford in the early 1950s, he was known as Rupert the Red because he kept a bust of Lenin on his dorm room mantle. But very quickly after graduating from Oxford, he sort of shed his liberal politics and moved further right. And he started his career kind of jumping in with both feet because his father, as I mentioned, Sir Keith Murdoch, died very unexpectedly in 1952 when Rupert was about 21 or 22 years old at the time. And Rupert was forced to run back to Australia from the UK where he was in university and take over the family estate, put his father's affairs in order. And in the process of settling the estate and paying taxes, the family was able to hold on to one small local newspaper in an Australian city called Adelaide. And it was from that one little holding that Rupert Murdoch began a quest that took him from Australia to back to London and then ultimately to America.
So first he acquires an additional paper in Sydney, but
So I should just, you know, sketch it out just to not get too in the weeds. But throughout the 1950s and early 60s, he ended up buying a string of newspapers and televisions all across television stations all across Australia and built really the kind of preeminent Australian media company. But you know, that continent was not big enough for his ambitions. And so in the late 1960s, he decamped to London and bought his first acquisition in the UK was a very lurid tabloid called The News of the World. It was a Sunday tabloid, very racy, but a massive readership. At the time, it was 9 million daily readers. It was the most read newspaper in the world. And so that was his first acquisition outside of Australia. And that was really the stepping stone to, you know, he went on to buy the London Sun tabloid. Then he moved to America and started buying newspapers here. He went on to start the Fox broadcasting station. He bought the Fox movie studio. And then, you know, in the 90s, built Fox News into a cable news powerhouse. So, you know, it was, I think that's a recurring theme of the book is, you know, Rupert's restlessness and constantly looking for the next target. If I had a mental image of Murdoch, it's really that he's like a great white shark. He just is always swimming forward and always looking for the next prey.
When you talk about him as a white shark seeking his prey, to what extent does that apply to his personal life?
I mean, exactly. I don't think there is. I don't think Rupert Murdoch has a personal life. I think there's really no separation between his business and his personal life. I mean, they're all so interconnected. But yes, you know, with his own relationships, when Rupert has decided that relationship has run its course, he is famous for just cutting it off and never looking back. He is the most unsentimental person that I've written about as a journalist. His ability to just cut people loose is, you know, is one of the most ruthless parts of his personality. And throughout the book, you see that pattern repeated time and again, where people who played, you know, very big roles in his life, even his own wives, ultimately got the sort of the Henry VIII treatment.
And you do talk about a number of business relationships that are summarily cut off, but let's sort of lay a little bit of groundwork about, you know, his wives and his children and how that's going to sort of set up this fight that we talk about later.
Yeah, so Rupert Murdoch has been married 5 times, but, you know, the most of this book covers his first, second, and third marriages, which were the most pivotal in terms of, you know, having children that would fight over the future of the estate. But yes, his wives were, his first wife was a very brief marriage. He married in the 1950s, he married a woman in Australia named Patricia Booker. She was a former airline flight attendant and model. That was a very brief marriage, but it did produce one daughter, a daughter named Prudence, who's Rupert's oldest child. Really the most significant marriage is a second marriage. While working in Sydney, he met a young, beautiful reporter who worked for one of his papers named Anna Torv. And in short order, they were a couple. And when his divorce to Patricia Booker went through, they ultimately got married. And Anna bore Rupert 3 children. And those are really the children that are the kind of the archetypes for the characters on Succession. So Anna's 3 children, the first born of which was Elizabeth Murdoch, born in 1968 in London. And then you have Lachlan Murdoch, born in 1971, and then his younger brother, James, born about 15 or so months after that. And those 3 children from Rupert's second marriage, which lasted 30 plus years, are the main characters of this book. That said, you know, we talked about Rupert cutting off relationships in the late 90s when Anna had just wanted Rupert to retire. She kept pressuring him to slow down. He got so fed up with that conversation that one day he just walked out of the marriage and divorced her. And in short order took up with a woman more than 2 decades younger than him, Wendy Deng, who also worked for him, who kind of embraced his quest to live forever and never slow down. So, those are the main marriages. I mean, there's sort of entertaining stories later in the book about his fourth wife, Jerry Hall, who famously was Mick Jagger's longtime partner. But yes, in terms of the main drivers of the drama, it was the children from the second marriage.
Yeah, the Jerry Hall part was very interesting to me.
Well, let's talk. We sort of touched a little bit about his management style, but I want to go into that a little more. You know, how was the day-to-day governance of News Corp run? How did he treat his subordinates? Mm-hmm. To what extent did he empower them? Just give us a, if we were doing a business book simply focused mm-hmm. on his management style, what would we be talking about?
So Andrew Neil, I like to think of it this way. Andrew Neil, who famously was a longtime editor of the Sunday Times in London and worked at other parts of the Murdoch empire. He described News Corp as the court of the Sun King. And Rupert, being the king himself, he was the center of the court, and everyone at News Corp orbited around him. And they all judged their position and their status from their proximity to Murdoch. So the entire a global media company, thousands of employees with newspapers and outposts all over the world. Everything relied on the decision-making of one person. This is not a company that was run by focus groups or, even really a board of directors. I mean, yes, it is a public company, but the Murdoch's family control of the voting stock is such that Rupert really didn't have to listen to the board. And there are examples in the book where he went and made, acquisitions. He bought the Star TV channel, his first big foray into the Asian media market, without even getting permission from his board. So, that's what I find actually really exciting. And one of the fun parts about covering Rupert is that he is kind of a seat of the pants style executive. He makes gut, decisions by instinct. And the company is a much more dynamic company than big other corporate companies like Disney or Warner Brothers, Discovery, or Comcast, the other companies that the Murdochs competed with. That said, I think the downside of that management philosophy is that, people at News Corp, especially the editors of the Murdoch papers, they always made decisions thinking what Rupert wanted. And one of his editors described it as like anticipatory obedience. It wasn't that Murdoch, it's not that Murdoch would call up editors every morning and dictate what the headline should be or what the editorial viewpoint should be. He didn't need to do that. And I think that's also a testament to his power. He didn't have to do it because the editors woke up every morning imagining what would please the boss. And sometimes that actually backfired because they went too far and he got into, journalistic scandals because editors, made sort of poorly thought decisions because they thought it was what Rupert wanted, when in fact, and it also gave him plausible deniability. He could say, well, I wasn't involved. But, I think that's a good sketch of the upsides and the downsides of his management style.
So against that backdrop, let's sort of set up the three key children and their career mm-hmm. paths that sort of lead us to this succession battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, Elizabeth, the firstborn from his second marriage, many people consider her to be the sharpest and the smartest of the Murdoch children. And her character on Succession is the daughter Shiv, who they also portray on the show as kind of the savviest and the smartest of the characters. But Elizabeth, had the misfortune of being born a woman in a patriarchal family. Murdoch is a very subscribes to sort of old school misogyny, and this is a really, I think, been a detrimental part of his career. He never gave his daughter the the chance or the fair chance to compete in the succession competition. So pretty early on, Elizabeth stepped away and quit the company and went to start her own business. And she's the only Murdoch child who is very much successful in their own right. She became a major TV producer here in the UK. Her company produced such hits as like The Office and reality shows like Biggest Loser and such. So that's Elizabeth. Lachlan, the firstborn son, is really the golden child. He was always in Rupert's eyes the chosen one, partly because Lachlan's politics always hewed conservative, even from an early age. He founded the Conservative Society at his private high school in Manhattan and studied philosophy at Princeton and also had a romance for newspapers. Lachlan is really the only Murdoch child who inherited his father's love for newsprint and news. And then there's James, you know, who had the bad luck of being the second born son and what, for all intents and purposes, operated like a royal family. And, you know, there's the heir and the spare. And James really struggled to carve an identity within this family. And I consider him kind of, I mean, they're all the children are sort of tragic in their own way. But, you know, James particularly had a very difficult time because he at times defined himself in opposition to his family. So as a teenager, he bleached his hair blonde and got an earring, which was, you know, sacrilegious to his conservative father. But then after graduating from Harvard and going to work at the family business, he went the other direction and he tried to be an uber capitalist and kind of the most ruthless of all the children to please his father. So he was constantly trying to figure out how to fit into this family where the entire, all of the attention seemed to be focused on his older brother. And then there's the Prudence Murdoch, just going back to Rupert's first marriage. She never played a role in the business. She's sort of known as the family truth teller because she wanted nothing from her father. She didn't want advancement at the company. She felt more liberated, I think, to speak her mind. And so she's a really refreshing voice in the book because she's willing to tell Rupert things that none of his other children will.
Yeah, exactly. So now when
and then I should say, just real quick, before we jump to the next question, you know, there are Rupert had two daughters with his third wife, Wendy Dang, Chloe and Grace Murdoch, who recently graduated from college. So they were very young during the period that this book mostly covers. But I should say they are very important characters because their mother, Wendy, angled for them to be treated as equal members of the voting trust that would determine the future of the empire. And that was anathema to Rupert's adult children and his second wife, Anna, who had made it a condition of her divorce from Rupert that only her children would have a say about the future of the empire. And Anna did not want any future children that Rupert would have with another woman to be treated as such. And that created a very contentious family schism. You had Wendy feuding with Rupert's adult children, Wendy feuding with Rupert, and it kind of all boiled to a head. And there's a very dramatic anecdote in the book about how in the mid-2000s, this fight got so intense that Wendy pushed Rupert in their Manhattan penthouse and he went flying backwards into a piano and later found out that he had broken some vertebrae. So this was a very heated argument.
Okay, so this sets up this fight. The Murdoch Trust is going to ultimately determine, as I understand it, what happens to the voting and stock of, I guess, is this corporate structure still News Corp at that time?
Yes.
Okay.
It, Basically. I mean, it did split. Yeah, basically. Yeah. You can just say News Corp.
So this is going to be the conflict. This is the succession-like battle. Who's on whose side, and what, and how do they maneuver against each other?
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, by the, you know, mid 2000, 2010 to 2020 or so, Rupert decided to end the speculation, and he named Lachlan his de facto successor. That did not go down well with the other children, but they accepted it for a time. Where this became a legal showdown that played out in a secret Nevada courtroom several years ago, it occurred because Rupert decided to rip up the trust and rewrite the rules to disenfranchise James, Prudence, and Elizabeth and take away any of their voting rights. And then we should go back to the earlier point I said, and, you know, remember how I said that Rupert just cuts things loose and moves forward? Well, he did that to a irrevocable trust, a trust that had been written by his lawyers. You know, the word irrevocable, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I imagine in legal terms it means you can't change it.
Right.
And yet he did change it. And he found, you know, a small loophole in the legalese of the trust that basically said he could change the terms of the trust as long as it protected the financial interests of his children, which, you know, he came up with this tortured argument that making sure that Lachlan inherits the company is what's going to protect the bottom line, because Lachlan is conservative, and therefore it will, you know, the company, the business model depends on it being conservative. That was the argument. Needless to say, James, Elizabeth, and Prudence did not go along with this. And after Rupert had changed the family trust unilaterally, they sued him and Lachlan in Nevada probate court to overturn that decision and retain their voting rights.
Ultimately, as I understand it, and you lay it out in the book, while they prevailed, while the other children prevailed, they ended up settling. And so today we have Lachlan as the undisputed heir of the ongoing News Corporation. Have I got that right?
Yes, he is. James, Liz, and Prue won the legal case. Very quickly, Lachlan and Rupert appealed. And rather than fighting it to the end, which, you know, many people wanted them to, they wanted to have them get control of the company and make Fox News more responsible and sort of rein in some of the most outrageous parts of Murdoch Media. They didn't do that. And, you know, people close to them tell me that, you know, they settled for a variety of reasons. You know, number one, Rupert turns 95 in 2 days from now that we're recording this. And especially Elizabeth did not want him, given his advanced age. Yeah. She did not want him to die, you know, with this family feud hanging over them. And secondly, you know, the politics of, or sort of the legal landscape in America had changed so drastically after the 2024 election. You know, they worried that, you know, because Murdoch is such an ally of Donald Trump, that he could somehow manipulate the court system and, you know, grant them an appeal and throw their case out. So ultimately, they each settled for about $1 billion to relinquish their voting shares and hand the company to their sibling, Lachlan.
Okay, the book is Bonfire of the Murdochs. It is a fun read. We've left out a bunch of good stories in this brief interview, but they are well worth reading. Thanks for spending time with us.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back after this.